take a time machine back to before the world went to hell, around the year 2000.
The 80s and 90s were so rad. The movies, the music, the TV, the games, that's what I want to talk about.
Like and subscribe on your favorite podcast app and continue the conversation on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're cool enough, join the show on Patreon for exclusive bonus content. And now, Less Than 2000 with Adam Wintz and Chad Bischoff.
Less Than 2000,
now part of the
HyperX
Podcast Network. So happy my dad is here. Dan Wintz, my dad, is our distinguished guest.
Hello, Mr. Wintz.
For today's topic, Top Gun.
Hi, Chad.
There's so much behind that casual hi, Chad. There's like a million things maybe rushing through your mind of like the last 40 years of
hell. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to send the two of you to Top Gun.
Yes. Awesome.
The opening on the deck of the carrier is a ballet. And the director of photography was Jeffrey Kimball. And the director of the movie was Tony Scott. And I don't know if you know, Tony Scott was Ridley Scott's brother. And Tony Scott's dead now. But anyway, that scene, that opening scene is so beautifully choreographed in the dawn on the carrier. It just I was just so struck with it. I was pulled into it immediately. This movie should have received, I believe, an Oscar for nomination for best cinematography, but I don't know that it was ever nominated for any Academy Awards.
It was nominated for Academy Awards, and it won one Academy Award for Best Song, and it was Danger Zone.
Oh, okay. Well, that takes me to part two of the two things that really impressed me. The musical soundtrack of this, the songs suck, but the soundtrack is a character in this movie. And it's a character in this movie at the same level that the soundtrack in 2001 A Space Odyssey is a character, and the soundtrack in Dune Part 1 is a character in that movie. That those movies, these three movies, it would be so much different if you did not have this particular soundtrack that went with them. I really think that Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone sucks. That was, I believe, supposed to be done by REO.
Danger Zone. The song that got nominated, won the Academy Award, is the one that sucks.
And then the other song that really irritates the hell out of me.
I know this one.
In the movie.
Take my breath away.
No way! Yes, Berlin! Berlin! Oh! God.
Oh, man.
Watch
it. That is maybe the worst 80s song in the whole. And there are a lot of bad 80s songs.
Yes.
Really bad 80s songs. But that is up there in the top five for sure.
The number one pop song of 1986, by the way. The number one song of 86.
Well, all right. Well,
crap sells.
Grunge was coming, and you get crap like You Take My Breath Away. Oh, no. Anyway.
I think you and I can agree on that, Mr. Wintz.
well, good. I am glad for that. Anyway, and I'll just ramble on in another direction. Then, Jerry Bruckheimer, who is one of the two producers, had a problem getting this movie made because I think it was Paramount gave him a budget of $15 million. And in 1985, 86, $15 million, and it sounds like a lot of money, but it's not.
Not for something like this.
I think.
No.
No. You know, I don't know with inflation what $15 million, maybe it's $40 million today, but Chad, you know, $40 million is not a blockbuster movie budget.
No. No, I mean, until you get to that 50, 60 million mark, that's what starts the blockbuster movie budget.
Now everybody knows where I get it. Show over. Dad has taken all the notes. He's covered everything. Thank you very much.
Good night now.
Chad, I want to come back to you and ask you, does your film, you know, if it's just not working, just throw in a 3-minute montage to some Kenny Loggins playing with the boys of just oily men playing beach volleyball.
You know, I have been sitting here wondering.
Sweaty, oily men.
Yes.
Sweaty, oily men.
Thank you. I have been sitting here wondering. I'm like, something's missing in Daft State. And I've been trying to figure out, that's it.
Tony Scott himself referred to it as softcore porn.
Did he really?
What's
the point of his 3 minutes?
And Bruckheimer has too.
And when Tony Scott came on, he was actually fired 3 times during the making of this because he wasn't seeing eye to eye with Bruckheimer. And Tony Scott's original vision was, this is Apocalypse Now, or like Das Boot. So something really gritty and dark and cerebral. And they're like, no. It's a music video. That's what we want. And it took him a while for that to click. And when it did, they were off and running. But you kept referring to the opening sequence in the Dawn takeoff stuff. Mm-hmm. He was actually fired for that because they didn't like all the slow motion moody stuff. And it turns out to be one of the best opening sequences. And then the plane takes off and Danger Zone kicks in. And then we're off to the races with a music video.
What's most fun about this show is being able to go back and talk about the things that we absolutely love, but then go into these types of conversations. Because so many people they spend their $10, they go to the theater, they spend their 2 hours, they eat popcorn, and then they go, well, that sucked, or that was cool, and that's it. The same guy fired 3 different times on the same movie for the same purposes that some people love and other people are going, no, get out. That's art, you know, like, and nobody sees the underbelly of this, you know, but there's a lot of people with, you know, their hands in the decisions and it can greatly affect how a movie or a song or an album come out.
And Tony Scott then went on to direct, as you mentioned, True Romance, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Crimson Tide, The Last Boy Scout. I mean, he went on to have an incredible career.
Great movies.
It just launched by Top Gun. And he almost didn't make it through production. As far as a recruitment ad aspect of it, I think it works very well because it's got the heroism. It's got the, you know, the guy gets the girl. It's just really, really cool.
What do we think? And even the backseat guy, you know, he's got Meg Ryan for his wife.
Yes.
For God's sake, you know?
Yes. Even the navigator or co-pilot gets Meg Ryan. And she was so great. I mean, there's something, she's only got 3 scenes, but she was so perfect and just has that it to her. This was years before
was her breakout role. She had been in TV on some soap opera for years, but she should have gotten nominated for the best supporting actress. I mean, you know, she's that far down.
I want to create a new category called best day player. Like the person who has the one day, the Academy goes to best day player.
Come on, honey, you big stud. Take me to home or take me to bed or leave me forever.
Goose, you big stud. Take me home or you're going to lose me forever. That's the line.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast is on a mission to rank the top games of all time.
I like the idea that when Bruce Wayne gets angry, he switches to the Batman voice.
Why do you have such a problem making boomerangs shaped like a bat?
You mean like Batman?
Not like Batman. Just make it for me, Bruce Wayne. I can't even with this guy.
It's a Herculean task, and I'd be lying if I said it hasn't taken a toll on our cognitive faculties.
Most people would be happy to have a job during a global pandemic. Dennis.
Hardcore Gaming 101, twice a week, every week, right here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origin 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origin 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys while ditching the numpad and the F keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection and the precision you need to click heads. The Alloy Origin 65 and Pulsefire Haste Wireless. A terrific twosome to keep your setup clean and clutter-free.
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
SequelCast 2 and Friends looks at movies and video games and franchises, one movie and game at a time. Hosted by Matt Bradley Schurge, Thrasher, and Alex Miller, been going since 2009, and we're part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
This is something I have wondered about since 1986. When Iceman and Hollywood go up to meet the two MIGs at the final battle seat. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they find out it's not two MIGs. It's not four MIGs, six MIGs. Mm-hmm. Holy. Hollywood gets shot down and then Iceman, with a missile takes out one of the MIGs. And then he gets shot up, loses an engine. Launch Maverick finally.
Ready fire.
They launch Maverick, and he takes out three of the MIGs. So there are two left. He has no more missiles. Maverick shot all four of his missiles. His wings are bare, and he's got a partner who's only got one engine. And then they say, "And the other two MIGs are bugging out." Why would the other two MIGs not continue the fight? You've got an unarmed F-14. It may have a machine gun, but it has no more missiles. And you've got another F-14 that's only got one engine. Why would you bug out? I don't get that. I just don't buy it.
In the chaos
under the rules
of
engagement.
In the chaos of a right? of a dogfight, are they able to necessarily see as fast as they're going and flying around? Are they able to just see, hey, there's no more missiles on that one?
Well, you can count. I mean, you know an F-14 only carries, you know, you're counting how many they have. I mean, that's something the guy in the rear is supposed to be doing.
Mm. No, remember the MiGs did not have a co-pilot. They were only one.
No, you're right. They're one seaters. They're F5s. Okay, yeah. One more thing. This is a bugs me thing about the movie. Maverick's signature move is, I'm going to put on the brakes. He's going to fly right by. Right?
Yes. Yes.
What does he do? He presses the handles forward. What that does is accelerates the F-14, not slow it down. It's just the reverse of what you do if you're trying to stall it. You would pull it toward you. Mm-hmm. And they do this twice. Yeah. And it just drives me frickin' crazy.
This is why people don't trust Hollywood.
This is where I got some of my cynicism. This is where I got some of my critical eye for everything.
A lot is becoming clear in this episode.
Yes, the nitpicky, all. And I remember, Dad, with this movie being one of my first memories of this, and then it would continue on as we would watch movies together. You're constantly correcting things as the movie's going. One of the things that I very vividly remember from the 80s is they shoot down three or four MiGs, they land, the guys are recovered, everybody's happy on the carrier, slapping each other in the back, Iceman and Maverick have their moment. I remember you saying, "We would be at war! This would not be like this happy little, it's all behind us now." Like, you shot down enemy planes in their territory. Like, we would be at war.
Well, you're right. We would.
Val Kilmer was doing method acting, and he intentionally kept himself separate from Tom because their characters were at odds with each other and competitive. And that they stayed in different places and didn't hang out. And if Tom would show up somewhere, Val Kilmer would leave. And it was just kind of always in character. The scene in the locker room, that you're dangerous. what do you know, Ice Man? All that scene was almost entirely ad-libbed by Val Kilmer. And the whole the scene where they're describing the inverted 4G drop, Val goes, poof, ad lib, and apparently they later became friends, and I heard that Tom Cruise insisted that Val Kilmer be in this new Top Gun Maverick movie, so they got over it.
Cool.
There was some tragedy in this. Did you know that someone died? A stunt pilot actually died? Arthur Everett Scholl was a renowned stunt pilot, and he died during the making of the scene where Goose dies.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
and they never found his plane, never found his body.
Wait, what? How is that possible?
And the movie is dedicated to him. At the very end of the credits, it's dedicated to Arthur Scholl. Did you have any issues with letting your son and your younger daughter than me even watch a movie with they frequently use the word they say there's the lovemaking scene, there's the volleyball scene. what did you feel about?
You know, did I have problems with? No, I didn't. Not
really. I love that you're like searching to justify the.
Dad, thank you for doing this. I noticed when on my rewatch that how many parallels that I had never noticed before between this and A Few Good Men. It has Tom Cruise. It's about the Navy. He's living in sort of the specter of his father. And it kind of, I kind of realizes as watching it how much being a litigator, a trial lawyer, is like being a fighter pilot. He says you don't have time to think up there. You just have to act on instinct. Stuff is happening so fast and everything like that. And I don't know. I just was like, wow, this is a lot like A Few Good Men. This could have been Caffey.
Well, as I've rewatched it, I think of Caffey frequently. Tom Cruise as Caffey, as I'm watching it, there's just this intrusive image that comes into my mind during rewatches of Top Gun.
And I wanted to say we have a lot of fun on the show. We make a lot of jokes, but to have
and the female character in both movies, in a way, outranks Tom Cruise's character. Definitely outranks him in A Few Good Men. Mm-hmm. And this civilian from the Pentagon, you know, has much higher clearance than Maverick does.
You bringing that up gives me a second to avoid the emotional moment for just a couple more seconds, because that's like, more notes. And the bit characters, the casting is incredible on this. I mean, you got Anthony Edwards as Goose, who went on to be in ER forever, and he's so likable and just, I mean, unbelievably personable, and just adds that layer of comedy. And gosh, when you know that he dies, it's kind of so obvious. Like, with the movie conventions that we've had for 30, 40 years, it's like, he's the funny guy. He's the family man. He gets to see his wife and kids right before the scene he dies. So it really has that extra punch. But in that dirty mustache he's got, he's just... Anthony Edwards is so good at this. You mentioned Tom Skerritt, who was really the only guy that had done much before this. Michael Ironsides, who was, you know, Jester, who went on to be the mean looking bad guy in just about everything, or that character actor in things like, well, Total Recall and Starship Troopers. Mm-hmm. But Tim Robbins as Merlin. I didn't know that Tim Robbins was in this movie until I rewatched it. This launched so many people's careers. We already talked about Meg Ryan. Kelly McGillis never really did anything again after this. Nothing of note. It kind of ruined her life in many ways. It broke up the band Berlin. Berlin was not happy. They were a partnership, and the singer's like, I want to do this. And the songwriter's like, we don't do other people's stuff, and a love ballad and everything like that. But Chad, you'll love James Tolkien. Not, J.R.R. Tolkien. James Tolkien, the principal from Back to the Future 2, with his bald head and the cigars and just the yelling in your face.
Yep.
And I realized, as great as his performance was, his character is pure exposition.
Yes.
His job is to just get you from point A to point B and be like, what? We're under attack? Oh, you're going to Top Gun and all this stuff.
But everything actors hate.
even the bit parts were just incredible, and these people went on to be some of the biggest stars of the late 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, yeah. I guess I can't avoid the emotional stuff.
Yeah, anymore. I want you to get emotional. Well,
just thinking about A Few Good Men and the prominent dad and following in the footsteps and all this stuff. You know, I made lots of jokes on the show before about how I became a lawyer because of A Few Good Men and Night Court. Really, Night Court and A Few Good Men. But the reality of the situation is, you were my biggest inspiration for my career and following in your footsteps, and having big shoes to live up to for so many years. You're Dan Wentz's son, aren't you? Is Dan your father and all of this stuff? He's a really brilliant guy and all this. So you know, there's this moment where
who are you talking about?
my
you don't
dad.
Want to claim. You don't want to stake this claim, huh?
I still work on, but it's one of those things where, you know, Caffey and Maverick both have to become who they are instead of just, you know, trying to live up to the reputation of their father. But in the same way, in so doing that, you know, honoring you and I can't be you. I'll never be as smart as you. But there's other things that I can do to be, I hope, as good as you, or at least not embarrass you. And, you know, as I'm getting ready to move off.
But
to,
getting
to
your
Arizona,
stuck, your Explorer stuck on the Union Pacific tracks was, you know, a problem.
Oh, my gosh. Because we talked about that with Chad's mom.
We talked about this.
You've heard me talk about on the show, ladies and gentlemen, when things start getting too real, I've got to jump to comedy and diffuse the real feels with some sort of joke. You, again, see where I get it. So I just wanted to say I love you, Dad. You're an inspiration. I'll always be your son. You'll always be my father. I'm so proud to be your son, and I love you to death. Thank you for everything, especially being on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really, really love you and appreciate it. Thank you. I love you too, Chad.
So great to see you. Thank you so much for humoring us and listening to our show and supporting us. It means a lot. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.